Hello, welcome to the Comics in the Golden Age podcast. This is your host, Mike Lane, and I want to welcome you to a special episode. Why is it special, you may ask? Well, it is special because it is our first time participating in the Super Blog Team Up. If you're not familiar with that, it is an event in which various comic book blogs and podcasts all cover the same general topic, but with their own spin on it depending on what their blog or podcast is usually about. For example, I believe it started several years ago with the general topic of superheroes hanging up their masks. So each participant discussed various examples of heroes abandoning their superheroic identities, supposedly forever. So this year the topic is gimmicks, which is something comics have never had a shortage of, going all the way back to their very beginning. This being the first time our Golden Age show was participating, I wanted to do something different, something that isn't the sort of gimmick that has appeared in the modern era, at least that I know of. So I chose a topic that is something I've been wanting to discuss for a while, and that is Fawcett Comics' Mighty Midget comic series from 1942 and 1943. You may be wondering how an entire series could qualify as a gimmick. That's because the series was originally produced by a third party intended to run just as a miniaturized reprint series on its own. But then several of them were reproduced and actually attached in several regular issues of some of Fawcett's biggest titles, including Captain Marvel Adventures. So when children would see that month's issue of Captain Marvel on the newsstand, it would have a miniature comic book affixed to the front cover, but still at normal price. It's very similar to the 1990s when trading cards would be included with some of the comics. Here, instead of a free trading card, you'd get an actual extra comic, although a bit smaller size from a regular book. I know if I was a kid and I saw that attached to a comic in the newsstand or spinner rack, and I didn't have to pay anything extra, I'd get very excited. If you're around my age, which is 46, you may remember a very similar experience with the Masters of the Universe action figures in the 80s. They would come with mini comics included in them. And in fact, these Mighty Midget comics are very similar in size to those Masters of the Universe comics, if my memory serves correctly. I have to admit, I haven't laid eyes on one of them in probably 30-something years. Now, I selected this topic because of those issues that were attached to the regular size comics, which qualifies as the gimmick. So let me back up and go back into the early origins of these Mighty Midget comics. Now, these were actually originally published by the Samuel Lowe Company through an agreement with Fawcett. Now, for some background, Samuel Lowe had been president of Whitman Publishing, a subsidiary of Western Publishing. Comic fans should be familiar with both of those through Dale and Whitman. But he resigned and founded a rival publishing house of children's books under the name The Samuel Lowe Company. They also did puzzles, paper dolls, things like that. Now, these little Mighty Midget comics were 36 pages, and they measured about 4 inches by 5 inches. They contained all reprint material and appeared to have been sold both individually and wrapped in a pack of 4 mini-comics. Now, the ones that were wrapped in a mini-comic would have the label 128 pages of Action Comics on them. Some were actually also given away as part of sets with other Lowe's premium items. So those copies, at least, were serving purely as promotional items for Lowe's. Now, these were all produced in 1942 and 1943, and each of the first 6 books were numbered as 11 for some reason. The next 7 were numbered as issue 12. The last 6 were not given any number at all for whatever reason. Those that were given away as premiums usually had a company ad printed on the back cover. The Mighty Midget comics featured different heroes in each issue, and they included some of Fawcett's most prominent heroes who had their own titles, including Bullet Man, Captain Marvel Jr., Captain Marvel, Golden Arrow, Minuteman, and Ibis the Invincible. There were also issues devoted to heroes who as yet had not had their own titles, including Lance O'Casey, the spectacularly named Balboa the Boy Magician, and Pat Wilson and his Flying Fortress. Several of them also showcased characters who would otherwise never have their own self-titled comics, such as Commando Yank, Dr. Volts the Human Generator, another great name, Leatherneck the Marine, very original there, Mr. Q, Mr. Scarlet and Pinky, the Phantom Eagle, Tornado Tim, and State Trooper Stops Crime. Now let's jump forward to when Fawcett used these as gimmick by attaching them to the regular Fawcett comic. The only difference in the physical appearance was that the Mighty Midget comics were either blank on the back or had a small victory stamp seal on the back. The attached copies had full promo ads on the back. Only Captain Marvel, Captain Marvel Jr., and Golden Arrow have been documented as having been attached to the cover. Now, obviously, the larger comics are more valuable if they still have the miniatured comic attached, although it appears that these miniature comics were not attached to every copy of the larger issue that went out. Now, a lot of the information about these online is very vague, so as to what made them do this, I don't know where the idea came from. It was hard enough piecing together information about the origin of the comics from Sam Lowe Company, although even that's contradictory. Now, the ones attached to the cover do still list the Samuel Lowe Company as publisher, But they don't seem to just be surplus copies because the back cover is different than the copies that were put out by Lowe's originally. I suppose someone at Fawcett must have known about the deal with Lowe's and thought up the idea of attaching some of these as a way to entice kids who were shopping at the newsstand. And as I said, if I saw comics on the newsstand that had many comics attached to them, I'd have probably gotten really excited and snapped them up. So let's take a look at one of these, because I happen to own one of them. My copy is Captain Marvel number 11, which was part of the first set that came out in 1942. Now, my copy has a victory stamp on the back, so it was actually one of the ones used by Lowe's and not one of the gimmicks attached to the regular comics. But as we noted, aside from the back cover, it's exactly the same as the one that was attached to an issue of Captain Marvel Adventures. Now, the cover of this is a copy of the cover to Wiz Comics 22 from 1941 by C.C. Beck and Pete Costanza. It contains two stories, the first of which is Captain Marvel and the Bumble-Brained Bridegroom. That is not easy to roll off the tongue. Now, this story is 20 pages. As I said, the entire issue is 36. And this particular first story first appeared in America's Greatest Comics number 4 and was drawn by C.C. Beck. Unfortunately, the writer is unknown. The second story is 14 pages, and it's called Captain Marvel and the Alaskan Adventures. It originally appeared in Captain Marvel Adventures number 16 and was written by the great Otto Bender, one of my all-time favorite writers, and of course drawn by C.C. Beck. There are no other stories or features, no pinups or anything else. The inside is black and white and coloring with some red tints as well. I'm going to focus on the first story in a moment, and I'm not really going to talk about the second one, and a big part of that is the second one involves the Japanese soldiers as a villain, so of course in keeping with the era, there's some out-of-dated racial comments and other troubling things in it, and not that I don't cover those in the podcast. I think we have to be honest about these, and I think some of them are worth covering, but I do think when it's there, we have to talk about it, and since this episode's really just intended to be part of a fun crossover, that's not really a road I want to go down. So instead, I'm going to focus on that first story. One thing that jumped out at me about it was that it features appearances of several major Fawcett heroes, including Spy Smasher, Lance O'Casey, Golden Arrow, and Ibis the Invincible. Now, this is a great idea. Had this been attached to an issue of Wiz, there'd be no advantage to this story being featured because those heroes were already in that title anyways. But since it's attached to an issue of Captain Marvel Adventures, it's entirely possible that the children picking this up may not have had any previous exposure to those characters. So, I have to say, this was a good selection as far as that goes. Now let me start with the positives on this particular Mighty Midget comic. For one, the first story is pretty good. Dr. Savannah once Beauty... You know, I always had trouble pronouncing his daughter's name. As a kid, and I would see it, I started calling it Beautia, but I could also see it being called Beutia. And to be honest, as many times as I've talked about these comics with people over the years, I don't think I've ever had the occasion to say her name out loud or hear anyone else say it, so I honestly don't know. But for this story, I'm going to call it Beautia and apologize if I'm mispronouncing it and it's actually Beutia. I can't imagine it being Beutia, but anyways, moving on. In this story, Dr. Savannah wants Beutia to get his daughter to get over her love of Captain Marvel, so he makes old Professor Edgewise young and strong again so she will fall for him instead. Now, Edgewise kind of was a light character, a goofy professor in a previous story, but after he gets transformed by Savannah here, he kind of goes down a darker road, and he actually uses a hypnotic spell to ensure that she will fall in love with him. Meanwhile, Billy Batson is hosting a War Bond rally featuring the other Fawcett heroes that I mentioned. Savannah sees an opportunity to get rid of all of them at once and convinces Edgewise to take some explosives beneath the building where they're holding their rally. Savannah gets so excited at the prospect of destroying the heroes that he forgets his concern over Beutia and decides to set off the explosives as soon as Edgewise is in the building. Edgewise reaches the building but is spotted by Spy Smasher. Captain Marvel disposes of the explosives and punches out Edgewise. We also learn that the reason the bomb never went off was because Beutia had overheard Savannah's plan and cut the wire from the explosive switch. This is because she had actually fallen in love with Edgewise because of his hypnotic spell. Marvel's punch had also hit Edgewise so hard that he actually flies all the way back to where Savannah and Beutia are, and the new couple go off together. The heroes finish the rally, and afterwards Billy stumbles upon four men trying to commit suicide by jumping into a river. Cap stops him, and they explain that their hearts were all broken when they heard that Beutia was getting married. Cap rushes to Judge Shyster's marriage foundry, and another great name. So anyways, Cap rushes to Judge Shyster's marriage foundry and interrupts the wedding ceremony. The sight of our hero breaks the hypnotic spell that Beutia is under, and Edgewise gets angry and confronts Cap, but does not prove to be much a challenge to our hero, and Beutia gives him the potion that restores him to his older self. Edgewise lost all memory of what happened and is back to his original kinder self. Beutia is also very excited because she realizes Cap must love her since he interrupted the wedding. But he explains that he only did it because he wanted to make sure that there weren't men out there committing suicide over her marriage. although he walks away and wonders to himself if maybe he really did do those things because he cares for that girl. Okay, so there's a lot of problematic elements as far as Bedia goes, as, you know, her father trying to marry a guy that puts her under a hypnotic spell, and then she's not allowed to get married because of the effect on men, so I'm not going to deny there's a lot of sexism in this story, but I still think there was a lot of fun to this story. And seeing the other heroes show up, even if they didn't play a huge part of the story, that was just fun to see. They used to do that a lot, and there were a few bigger crossovers, but they also would pop in each other's stories like this to a small degree every once in a while as well. And these ones that appeared here, particularly Spy Smasher, Ibis the Invincible, really all of them, to be frank, were really the top stars of Fawcett Superhero Comics. And I believe they all featured in Wiz. But as I said, the idea of attaching it to this Captain Marvel issue was a good one as a way of promoting the other characters to kids that may have been picking up a Cap comic for the first time. So let me turn to some of the negatives, though, because as much as I enjoyed the story, this comic is small. It's really small. And of course, they're reprinting an older story, so it shrinks down the writing. And I really felt my old man eyes when I was reading this, the squinting, and it's not something I could read regularly without really hurting my vision. But having said that, little kids picking it up, it may not have been a deterrent to them. You know, they may have been able to have a much easier go of it than I did. Also, it's black and white. They don't reprint the coloring. And obviously that was Lowe's trying to save some money. But the red tint is still there. The red tint is done in a kind of very sloppy and haphazard manner. It doesn't stay within the lines of the panels very well. So that kind of takes away from it a little bit. And it kind of emphasizes kind of the cheapness of the product. Again, I don't know how much that would matter to little kids picking it up. They're just thinking, hey, I got a free extra comic with my comic. But I'm just saying now, if you ever go back and see this as an adult collector and try to read it, that's going to be a little bit of a disappointment. But, you know, otherwise, I think it's a cool gimmick. Got to think it made a lot of kids happy. Unfortunately, I couldn't find information as to how many of these there were, because apparently a lot of issues of the regular comics did go out without these mini comics attached, and they were really only affixed by a little bit of glue. Now, they were small enough that I don't think they were bothered to retailers. It's not like with trading cards in the 90s when you had to polybag them, or the trading cards sometimes would be attached a piece of cardboard inside and it would make the comic thicker. These were extremely thin and small, and they were probably just glued to the comic, and I don't think the retailers probably thought one way or the other about it. They just stacked it up with all the other comics. Now, how reliable was the glue? How did they stay together? I mean, now there's hardly any of these that are still around, but it's been 80 years. You know, I don't know. I got to think the success of them probably would go to how reliable the gluing process was and how many of the copies they actually survived with the mini comics attached when they hit the stand. Now, just so you know, obviously, when I found my copy, I just found it for sale by itself in a comic box. I can't even remember when, but I've had the thing like 15 years or so, and I'm pretty sure I didn't pay over $20 for it. Now, I don't even know if the retailer knew what he had, and my copy wasn't attached to anything. It was just a little mini comic, and it's the only one I've really seen over the years. I can't recall encountering any of them in any convention, because I know if I saw, you know, a Captain Marvel Jr. one, I would definitely snatch it up, and probably some of the others as well. So that's going to wrap it up today. I'm really happy to have gotten the chance and excuse to take a look at these Mighty Midget comics and the unusual gimmick of posting a mini comic to a regular issue. So, of course, this being part of a crossover, I want to give a shout out to the other blogs and podcasts that are part of it, and you can check out the various gimmicks that they discussed. Now, since we don't have a webpage or blog going along with the podcast, I am just going to mention them now, and I'm sure between Google and whatever you used to listen to your podcast, you'll be able to find them. So I'm just going to go down the list here. I'm going to start with the name of the blogger podcast and then give the title of the topic they indicated they're going to be covering and go to the next one. So let me start. The first one is Superhero Satellite. The name of theirs is going to be 70s and 80s Photo Covers. We have Chris on Infinite Earths. The podcast will be doing Teen Titans 1, and I believe the blog will be doing Adventures of Superman 500. Comic Reviews by Walt. They're doing 90s Revisited shiny covers. We all know what they're referring to. Also, the Source Material Podcast. They're going to be talking about Spider-Man Torment. Comics, Comics, Comics. Their topic is listed as Daredevil Fall from Grace. The Telltale Mind. They're going to be doing Worlds Collide, the Intercompany Crossover. Between the Pages. They gave their subject as Guerrilla Marketing. DC in the 80s, the top 5 most memorable DC gimmicks. Oh, that sounds interesting. Then Unspoken Issues, we'll be talking about Darkhawk 25, Dave's Comic Heroes blog, New Teen Titans 37, Batman and the Outsiders 5. When It Was Cool, theirs is Polybaggett. I love that title. Comic Culture Retrorama, they're going to be doing glow-in-the-dark covers. And In My Not-So-Humble Opinion, Forceworks 1. Oh, I very much remember Forceworks. And then finally, Black and White and Bronze, they're going to be talking about Spectacular Spider-Man Magazine. Oh, I'd always want to have a copy of that. So please check everyone out, and I hope you enjoy them. And I hope you enjoyed this one as well, and I just want to thank them for the invitation to participate this year. Gave me a chance to talk about something I wanted to for a long time. So with that, thank you for joining me again, and I hope to be back in the near future for our next episode. I'm a little off schedule still, but I do have a few recorded already, so I think we're going to be getting back on track with speedier episodes. Chris is still unable to return in the near future, but he has not left the show permanently. He is coming back, but in the meantime, he's giving me my blessing to continue on my own, as well as with the occasional guest host. Goodbye.
So ends another adventure with the Mighty Marvel. You won't want to miss the next exciting adventure with star reporter Billy Batson, his sister Mary, their friend Freddie Freeman, lovable Uncle Dudley, and that amazing talking tiger, Mr. Tawny.